what do you call them? We're going to the College of Physicians and Surgeons to their ethics board, and we're challenging what happened, and we're challenging the doctor. We're going to the Nurses Association and challenging the nurses. They're all a part of this systemic thing, right? And hopefully, and also the Ombudsman has been asking that there be outside auditing of the correction system because she sees the problem. So we're going to all of those places, and that's our fight right now around that. So you're always fighting in more than one different level, right? So,
and it seems like this injustice system, it goes all around. It's not just the legal system. As you've mentioned, you're fighting it in multiple battlefronts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we were facing a recent election, so we saw the same government being reelected. Mm-hmm. And we're not taking a stand here or anything that's better or the worst, but we do know that there is a continuity of these colonial parties that, like you see, for any of the candidates, they all have the same standard like politics based on this colonial rule. Like they, none of those have a different type of rule or anything like that.
Yeah, the I'm going to speak to that in a really, really specific sense. I'm from the downtown east side, and we see what's going on there. Mm-hmm. And we see that a majority of the people on the street are also indigenous people, and they're just there's no housing being provided. They're coming in the morning and taking everything they used for shelter the night before and taking it away and throwing it in the garbage. They have police watching and making sure they get away with doing it. So that's one part of it, but I'm going to go that. So that's the city. We have a billionaire in charge of the city right now. Mr. Sims owns several businesses and restaurants and a nursing business and all this. If he was to sell all of his entities, they'd be worth over $1 billion. So this is the guy. We call him Peloton Ken because he took one of the lecture rooms and set it up with his Peloton equipment so that he could have an exercise room. Not lecture room, one of the conference rooms. You know? So it's like...
Screen.
So you have these major narcissists that are running our world. As we talk about, I'm going to talk about two things. One is we had very strong female indigenous... MLA, who ended up having to resign, ended up stepping back because she was getting bullied from behind. So if you have a strong personality, a strong person, and you look at our government systems, it's been strong indigenous people all over the place that have made differences, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was an indigenous man standing up with a feather who said, no, we're not going to do the Meech Lake Accord. You know, and he held the federal government hostage until he agreed. You know, and we have so we had one MLA who I absolutely honor and had to step back because she couldn't put up with the racism and the hatred that was coming to her because she dared to stand up and assert herself as an indigenous person with rights in that caucus. So they made a big mistake and we ended up electing what's her name? Phillips. And she's powerful, you know. Stuart Phillips' wife, she's a very powerful person. And she's he always concedes that, because we run by matriarchies, he always concedes that she was the power behind him. She was the one who pushed him forward and made him become the president of the BC Union of Indian Chiefs and stuff, mm-hmm. right? But now she's in there. But what... It's like if you dare in a patriarchal, misogynist society, if you dare to stand up as a woman of a different culture, you're in trouble. And that's what happened there, right? And now they've run into a into someone who will not be intimidated and won't be pushed around, and neither would our other sister. So just going to go another one that you look at. We talk about there are two different sets of government in the Indigenous nation. There's the traditional, that's the chiefs, traditional chiefs and traditional clan mothers and all that. And then there's the ones that the government forced the Indigenous nations to take. That's the chiefs and council. And I'm not going to say all chiefs and council are bad, but I'm going to say the process they arrived at with that was wrong. Mm-hmm. They took and basically stopped Squamish as an example. They wouldn't give them anything to pave the roads or pay for the water or any of the stuff that they normally have to agree to and do, provide as a part of the Indian Act on reservations. They just stopped doing that, and they said, until you guys become an elected chief and council, we will not deal with you. So now we have two sets of government, one that the Indigenous nations recognize, the traditional mm-hmm. chiefs and council, or chiefs and elders, and then the elected chiefs and council. And it just brings colonialism, the elected chiefs and council. Its aim was to bring colonialism into the nations. So the other thing, you know, they talked about... And this isn't about activism, but it probably is in the end. They talked about bringing in an UNDRIP, the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People, and so the provincial government, they got right ahead of it, and they said, "Oh, we're going to bring that in," and they did ADRIP, and I don't know what that means, what the A stands. But anyway, what they did though. Is they framed it around, again, chiefs and council. They didn't frame it around. So it's only, first of all, chiefs and council are only responsible for the territory that the reserve is on. Very, very clear physical boundary. All the rest of the territory, they're not responsible for. So the traditional chiefs are. And that's why you see all these fights that are going on around the right, around the blocking of pipelines and everything else, are going on by the traditional people. They're saying, you can't run this across our land. This is our hunting territory. Well, there's no hunting territory quite often in the reserve. Those are quite small, you know, almost like a town. So it's like the country doesn't count, but the town does. So they're saying, well, we have traditional land here. We have sacred land here. You can't run this stuff. You can't do it without our permission. And they work their way around it by saying, well, we're not dealing with you guys. We're dealing with the chiefs and council. And there's another point that's made. I talked earlier about sovereign territory. Mm-hmm. A sovereign nation governs itself. And is not allied with another nation unless it chooses to be. So what they turn around, they do now is they turn around and they say, well, there's only the two nations down here that don't want the pipeline. The rest of these nations all do. But in actual fact, a sovereign nation would be like standing up and saying, well, all of Europe doesn't want a pipeline, although France does. You know, mm-hmm. France is a sovereign nation. If you were to say to France, well, Germany's going to tell you what to do. Well, we saw what happened when Germany tried to tell them what to do. But, yeah, we say Germany's going to tell you what to do. And that all these other nations have lined up against you, you're still going to say, well, no, but I'm a sovereign. I'm independent. We are French-speaking. Or as we would say, we're from... Coast Salish nations, or we're Anishinaabe, or whatever, right? And we have the right to determine what happens on our land. And that isn't done, and the irony of it, I'm going to say as well, is that getting away from the UNDRIP thing, the irony of it is I go into court, and they arrest me because I'm standing on my own, on our own territory at the direction of our elders and chiefs saying no. You can't come here.
What?
and they're throwing me in jail over it. Yet, as a part of the opening of court, they acknowledge that they're an unceded, unsurrendered territory of the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Musqueam nations. You know, so it's like,
what?
How can they sit there and acknowledge that and then subject you to criminal prosecution?
Because you're
telling them they can't be on your land, right? So it's like, so that's that. So the whole, so that's that part of it. But the other part is like, so we did everything we could to stop, and it would just, without getting violent, we did everything we could to stop the pipeline mm-hmm. from going through. It went through. So now the issue that we first had, we still have. We don't want them contaminating the Salish Sea or the lands that the pipeline are running along. So we're still kind of monitoring the land the pipeline is running along, and we're looking at how we can defend the Salish Sea. And they're out there with all their myths and rumors and false facts right now. The Exxon Valdez carried diluted bitumen, which is what we're dealing with on the pipeline. They managed to pick up less than 2% of that oil. That area is dead. It's contaminated forever. And so if that happens as they're coming out of English Bay, into English Bay, all that beach, that land's dead, they can only pick up at best 4%. So they have all these videos, you see them with their little fleet of rescue boats all coming out there, spill containment, spill control. All they can do is contain, they can't pick it up.
Oh my God.
So that kills everything under the ocean, you know, and we as indigenous people are supposed to be protecting our other nations, the winged ones, the swimming ones, the four-legged ones. And protecting our coastline and everything else. And we're sitting here now looking at it. They're going out from there with those boats, and if one of those boats spills, it's done. If that boat spills at the mouth of the Fraser River, the salmon run up the Fraser is done.
Oh.
So all these nations that said, yeah, we'll get a quick buck off of the pipeline by getting them to hire us as security agents or something, they now will not have traditional means of supporting themselves. They won't be able to go and catch the fish because the fish won't be there to be caught. That's the first part of it.
So how are we looking at fighting against that right now? Like, what are the ways both traditional communities are fighting against it and also outside of it, like the fight in the legal court, the fight, because the pipeline's ready, so a timeline of fight against it as well.
Well, I'm going to start by saying one of the ways we fought was with alliances, and one of the most disheartening things I've seen throughout this entire is that they came into city council in Burnaby and announced they had signed an agreement with Trans Mountain. We've had that agreement, those agreements are called community cooperation agreements, and those agreements were signed before by the nations. And what Trans Mountain said is, if you guys sign these agreements and you comply with us, we'll hire your people, right? So now what they've said to Burnaby is you guys will sign this agreement. And the agreement is bizarre. It says you're going to get $20 million, but you're getting it $5 million a year. And if we decide that you're not following the agreement, then it's null and void, so you will not get another penny. So I have two things to say. One is... we weren't sure if this new mayor, because he's, you know, first thing he did was move the legal council out of City Hall that was fighting over the pipeline, and he announced that he was going to reduce that. But beyond that, he's also done a lot of stuff. He does not, you know, he there are rules in place by the federal government that says that Burnaby cannot go onto Trans Mountain land. This is in relationship to the TMX, the new pipeline. But a lot of what's on that territory is not TMX. It's standard pipeline. It's old pipeline. It's been existing since the 50s. And Trans Mountain has no proper fire facilities, no proper way of addressing a fire or a spill if it breaks out. They've contracted with an agency in Surrey, which to get there and take care of stuff, they have to bring their own equipment, and they have to get across the Patello Bridge. And you try and do that during rush hour. So there's a couple hours of response. So instead of fighting over that, the new mayor decided that it would be really good to put a fire station right next to Trans Mountain. So now they have a fire station right next to Trans Mountain, which says to me, if anything breaks out in Trans Mountain, they're going to be right over there taking care of business for them, you know? And so we were never sure exactly where he stood. But when he and the council signed an agreement that they would no longer battle with Trans Mountain and they would reveal all information that was sought by them, by the community, from the city, all things that related to Trans Mountain would be revealed to Trans Mountain. And in exchange for that, they would get $20 million, $5 million a year. And if Trans Mountain at any point decided they were not following the game plan, that they were not as compliant as Trans Mountain wanted them to be, then the contract is null and void. So, I just have to say that we weren't sure if this mayor and council, mayor specifically, was for sale. Now we do. Now we know he is. And he sold for $20 million. And I'm not saying he received a penny of that. I'm not saying he didn't, because I know within our dealing with Indigenous nations that people have been offered money under the table by Trans Mountain. But what we do know is he agreed that if you gave him $20 million, he would fold the cards. He'd stop fighting Trans Mountain. He'd stop protecting. So this relates here, because if there is a spill or a fire, how do we get people off of SFU?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get them out of this area?
And it's what they are trying to make a simulation now on 27, right? Trying to make that happen.
Yeah, and they have no ability to make sure that Trans Mountain has the equipment and the capacity to respond to a fire. And we've seen in other situations. So, and you can have the best, you know, what's the Scotsman say, the best laid schemes of mice and men, gang after glay. They quite often go wrong. And so they have this idea that they'll do this stuff if there's a fire or there's an oil spill. But what we found when you look down south at the Crockett refinery, the oil was, there was a fire broke out. And they warned everybody to shelter in place. I'll talk about the fire in a minute, but they warned all the neighbors to shelter in place, and they'd been given lots of information and put through drills over it already. They didn't shelter in place. They tried to get out of there, and you ended up with a massive traffic jam all around that refinery, and no one could go anywhere. The cars were stuck, and that's the natural response. It's not to hide your head under the pillow, but to run. And so they tried to run, and it just caused a major gridlock. So what's going to happen here when you think of the way Gullardy Way and SFU work out together? You know, there's going to be major gridlock. The area of contamination is massive. It's, you know, all down the hill there, if there's a fire, or it depends which direction the wind's blowing. It's, you know, but anyway, so it's all... What a good group would do is to a good body would do is to make sure they'd looked at all the alternative plans and processes and that, right? And instead of that, they've agreed that they'll maybe cooperate in a couple things with Trans Mountain, but they won't criticize them. So if their stuff isn't right, nothing's going to get done. Nothing's going to get fixed. And so now, just going back to the sellout, you know, so we didn't know if Mr. Hurley was for sale. Now we know he is. And now people are going to know that forever. And they're going to try and figure out how much it's going to cost, how much of a gift they're going to have to give to the city council, so that they can be allowed to cut down all the trees, or do this, or do that, or do the next thing, you know. And so we've crossed a Rubicon that's really dangerous. We've crossed to a place where we no longer have principal government officials. We have government officials that are for sale, and they're not for sale for $20,000. They're for sale for $5 million, because if they don't do exactly what they're told, that money's cut off. So it's $5 million a year until they get the $20 million, and how do they can't build plans around it, because they don't know how long that money's going to be there, unless they absolutely plan not to contradict Trans Mountain for whatever they do. And Trans Mountain has shown themselves constantly to be unethical.
Referring to NDP, now reelected, they have, first of all, they do have, they have mentioned that as soon as federal government allows, they would like to back down on carbon tax. But beyond that, they also have multiple LNG expansion programs. So I just wanted to get your opinion on that, how that affects both general community, indigenous populations on both sides.
Well, I'm gonna go back a little bit. When we were first fighting Trans Mountain, the provincial government was cooperating with us, and the environment ministry was cooperating with us. And then Trudeau came into town one day, I think when he was looking at whether or not they could set up a Microsoft empire in Vancouver, and he crossed the road and went to this resource center. And my understanding is that the premier at that time was there, and had the premier was there and met with Trudeau, and you could draw a line in the cooperation with the provincial government. And I'm going to say also, at that point there was battles with the environment minister, who actually refused to run in this election, because he was having to kind of toe the line, you know, and he didn't agree with it. He believed he wanted to be ethically, and I know him from before, he wanted to ethically, Heyman, he wanted to conduct that environment ministry ethically. And there was agreements made. I think the agreement was made that the federal government wouldn't restrict the LNG pipelines if the provincial government wouldn't cooperate with us in trying to stop the Trans Mountain pipeline. Because you remember one of the stands that Horgan took was that they would do everything within their power to stop the pipeline. And you can draw a line in the on any calendar, and from that day back, there was lots of cooperation. From the next day, there was none. We actually checked out with environment members, people within the environment ministry, and we had to go up north to find out from someone that there was a memo given to no longer cooperate with the activists against the Trans Mountain pipeline. That's why we hit a brick wall. So that's a part of what we're dealing with. So we have we have that, but we also, again, I was dealing with Trans Mountain, was limited by my elders to only deal with that, not to go up and deal with the LNG. But the fight over the LNG was a dramatic fight to stop them from being able to do that work, and stop them from being able to run that LNG pipeline across our hunting grounds and our sacred lands. Their hunting grounds and their sacred lands for those nations up north, the sovereign nations that said you cannot come on our territory. So that's that part. The question of
carbon tax.
Carbon tax and carbon capture and stuff, right? It's like, at which point do we quit finding the softer, easier way? You know, and how much of it is just smoke and mirrors? Oh, yeah, we all stand up, we make this big, oh, yeah, we definitely want to deal with, you know, we definitely want to deal with the pipeline, and we definitely want to deal with reducing the carbon emissions and stopping fossil fuels and getting into electric, you know? And they sell out to the province of Alberta every chance they get, and they dig their own wells and do their own fracking in British Columbia because it's financially advantageous. Because I kind of look at the fact that maybe if they had taken in Alberta and put in major government funding, that $38 billion, $32 billion, I think it's 38, when we get to it we'll figure it out eventually, but $32 billion that they spent building that pipeline, what could that have done for us getting into a new dimension of energy? What would that have done for us being able to get more whether it's solar panel building or windmill building and setting up, or the other one they have that's really important for us is being able to channel the energy from the ocean, you know, and convert that into energy. All those things could be done, you know, and Alberta for sure is prime territory for solar panels and wind turbines. You know, and what if they had spent that money on that and helping Alberta move away from being exploiters? You know, like we always say the biggest problem with Canada is we've always been drawers of water and hewers of wood, you know, and we're still looking at doing the same stuff. And I have another, I'm going to...
and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon.
Stats can be hard to understand, but this one isn't. Nearly 1 in 4 people can't afford food in Canada. What does food insecurity look like where you live? Look up your address at foodsecuritynow.ca. That's foodsecuritynow.ca. Join Community Food Centers Canada in making a difference today.
Hello everyone, thank you for staying tuned in during this interview with Jim. It was a really important interview for me, and I hope you all enjoyed some of it. We still have like about 10 minutes left, basically summing up, talking about activism, how can you become one, and basically trying to understand the rest of the talk about how the pipeline end was and what are we looking for in the future. So if you want to, next week, tune in again at 3 to 4 for open mic. I'll be playing the rest of this audio. You can also find it on Speak Up next Tuesday. And I hope you all enjoyed it. So following this, we'll be having conversations from SFU Faculty of Communications, Art and Technology. It's going to go from 4 to 4:30. And I think that's what I wanted, what I wanted to bring here. All of this message on activism, all of his past, advocating for environmentalism in British Columbia is really important to us. And as we go through the conference of the parts, we see a bunch of found going from indigenous communities in Peru, Bolivia, Guatemala, and we also see, for example, major found for a finance platform. I forgot the name, but... as you see those investment happening, we know there's a lot to discuss on what's the role Canada is playing globe-wide. So again, last time, thank you for staying tuned in. Find me next week here and enjoy. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a good day.